At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You know, I've seen a lot of streams that have like the 30-second buffer before they start. We should probably do that just to give us a little bit of time to get things settled so sure. We can switch the scene. Yeah. But it's a little late now. We're already live. Either way. John, it's been a couple weeks since we've been here, and we just need to summarize what's been going on. It's been Seahawks pandemonium in terms of some nice wins. We've had the Huskies lost to Oregon, beat UCLA, some interesting stuff going on in the college football scene. And then obviously some news on the Mariners front in terms of like people are all over the Ketel Marte stuff. So maybe we'll talk about that at the end. But this is going to be mainly football and a little bit of college basketball here at the end. Anything to say before we get started?
No, let's dive in.
All right. Here, for those of you on the pod, here's some Coyote Picnic. On YouTube, we're going to stay here. Yeah, if you couldn't tell, a little rusty for the podcast. Now I gotta get everything going. The Seahawks, so it's been 2 weeks. Well, last time we talked, we were talking about that Titans game, and then they played the Vikings over Thanksgiving weekend. Let's break it down, like how you've kind of felt over these last 2 weeks with the rout of the Vikings and the Titans game kind of being turned into a little bit of a game, but overall we played pretty well. What were your thoughts coming out of that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a stretch now, looking back. Vikings, Titans, Rams game was pretty epic, but take that out of it. Cardinals, Commanders, where in four of the last five games, the game has been over in the first half, really. Rams game is the one exception. That was a really good game. Just didn't come out on top of the Seahawks. But other than that, I think 30-24 is final against the Titans, and that makes it look like it was a good game. But we were up 16-0. We were up 23-3. We were just all over the Titans, and then some garbage time stuff happened to make it more interesting. But there was never really any doubt in that one. And then, just an even more exaggerated outcome against the Vikings to just absolutely throttle them 26-0. Never felt so bad for a quarterback in my life as poor Max Prosmer. Just can't imagine what would have happened if it was JJ McCarthy. I think that would have been it. I think they put Max Prosmer underneath the sacrificial sword there, because whatever JJ would have done against the Seattle defense might have ended his career prematurely.
Yeah, the Titans game was interesting. Like you kind of said it perfectly, they came back there, but in general, this offense has just been clicking in such a way that it's like, hey, every week Sam Darnold is going to go for 250 yards on like 25 to 30 passes, and the rushing attack is going to get probably 100 to 130 yards. And that's going to be it. Like, that's going to be the attack, and it's how frequently we score there. And that's all based on like defensive positioning. I feel like everything else has just been kind of like chugging along with the Seahawks offense. But yeah, the defense is really where things shined. And that Minnesota game was quite the example of it. The four interceptions, 26-0, like shutting out the Vikings is quite a big deal. I think that was the first time they'd been shut out since like 2019 or something, from what I heard on the broadcast. Ernest Jones continues to be the guy in this defense. Since we acquired him from the Titans, he's just been like an unstoppable force. Two interceptions in that game, 12 tackles. He's just the linebacker that everybody wants on their team, and he's been perfect for Mike McDonald's defense so far. Another shout out to Byron Murphy as well. He's just been really consistent this season, and a guy that, with the injuries from last year, kind of people forgot about, and with the Nick Emmanuori pickup and everybody else in this defense, people kind of forgot about Byron Murphy, and he's just, continued to be really good all season. So some good things coming from him. But yeah, that Vikings game just made us feel very, very good. And it honestly brought my like Super Bowl hopes back. I think there's no like extremely complete team in the NFL this year that's like every aspect of the game they're the best in, or like really good in. And I think this Seahawks team, I think our rushing offense is a little lackluster sometimes, and our passing game can be a little weak when Darnold gets flustered. But other than that, like everything about the rest of this team just clicks all the time, and these games were really the example of that. I just want to see us do it against good opponents.
Yeah, 100%. I think One other thing, and just in terms of what this team can be, that was, I think, very positive. Vikings have a very good defense. You know, I, yeah. This Vikings team, this roster's got a lot of talent. They've just been, they gave away a good quarterback, and they've been really, really struggling to fill that hole. But this was a game where Sam Darnold struggled. He did. 14 of 26, 128 yards, only a 70 QBR. He did not throw a touchdown. You know, but they didn't need that much from him. And it was a game where he was struggling, where he took care of the ball. No turnovers from Sam Darnold against a really solid defense in the Vikings. So, you know, again, there are going to be games against teams like the Rams where you do need to do a little more. You know, you have to push it a little bit more because it's a more competitive game. But I was encouraged, especially after that Rams debacle from Sam, that he was like, okay, you know, we've got this thing on lock. The defense is totally locking this thing down. I'm going to try to attack downfield to the best of my ability. You know, by far and away, JSN's worst game of the year with only 23 yards. But I'm going to try to attack downfield, and if it's not working, I'm not going to get in the defense's way. And that is an important lesson, I think, for a team where our strength is clearly on that side of the ball. You know, JSN may be the offensive player of the year, but our strength on this team is still the defense.
Yeah, you look at the second half of these Vikings possessions, and it's just fumble, interception, 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 turnover on downs, end of game. Like, they didn't have anything going in the second half of this game. And in the first half, it was, you know, obviously they didn't score, but it was just punts after punts after punts with the one interception. So just really, like, they didn't get anything going yardage-wise. I think that was the big thing. Like, yes, Max Brosmer threw for 126 yards, but it's like the rushing attack by the Vikings being stopped up so heavily just proved like the multi-layered capabilities of the Seahawks defense. And it's, you know, it's against a rookie QB in his first game ever. You know, you're not expecting to shut out teams in the playoffs or anything like that, but that's just like a really good sign that, first of all, the Seahawks like were able to pour it on, and against, like you were saying, against a good defense, we were able to take care of the ball and not allow turnovers to be the reason that the Vikings got in this game. So really good stuff there. And really, you know, shows what Sam Darnold learned from that Rams game of like, hey, if you don't turn the ball over, we can just punt it away and we'll get it right back and we'll kick a field goal. Like, it's a net positive for us to punt it away instead of you giving up an interception or turnover or anything like that. So really, really good things from the Seahawks over the last little bit. I'm just scrolling through the Minnesota and Seahawks box score, and I just looked and Justin Jefferson had a tackle, and I just got excited about that. But yeah, holding Justin Jefferson to two catches for 4 yards, all this stuff is just really great to see. Unless you have anything else to say, we can look ahead to this Falcons game.
Last thing, just want to shout out Jason Myers, bombing away field goals. That's what we needed. That's how we scored most of our points. 28 to 33 on the year, so doing a good job.
Yeah, for sure. This next game is against the Falcons, who I don't think anybody's been able to pinpoint the Falcons at all this year. They're 4-8. Have so many weapons. Michael Penix Jr. is banged up, and they've been starting Kirk Cousins, I believe, recently.
Correct.
They're just basically scoring 24 points a game. Like, that's just been their thing over the last 5 games. They lost 24-23, 31-25, 30-27. They won 24-10. They're just going to score 20 points a game. With the weapons that they have, they've just been so consistent since they've kind of figured out what to do in terms of give Bijan Robinson the ball. I would love if we could hold them to like 14 points. Like, that would be really nice to see from the Seahawks team. And obviously their defense isn't going to be as good as the Vikings. So I'm expecting this to be a relatively easy game, but we want to make sure that we're containing Bijan, limiting those explosive plays. And I think, you know, I say that's just going to be an easy game. I'm always concerned. It's the NFL. Any team can win in any week, but excited for this week and what should be a nice, easy stretch before we've got the big game upcoming next week.
Totally. One, it's completely insane. It's honestly kind of crazy that it's been 5 straight weeks where the Falcons have scored between 23 and 27 points. That's bonkers. What a tight range that is. But they've also, I think their schedule in general, and especially if you look at the last couple of weeks, Jets, Saints, Panthers, Colts, Patriots, Dolphins, Niners, Bills, Commanders. They have not played very many good defenses. They have not played a single defense that's on par anywhere near the Seattle Seahawks. So even though they're on a nice scoring stretch here, I would expect a pretty significant drop, especially with old man Kirk sitting there like a rubber chicken in the pocket. I think if we're just able to focus and shut down Bijan as much as anybody can. This one should be pretty easy. Falcons do have a pretty good pass defense. That's been kind of their calling card this year. So it will be interesting. You know, most teams want to attack the Falcons on the ground. Seahawks are not the most equipped to do that. So it is kind of a negative game script for our offense. But again, ideally, this is a one. Just don't get in the defense's way. Atlanta has been famous for, you know, failing to turn great Bijan games into actual wins. So if you just, you know, focus on slowing Bijan down and getting to the old man, I think this one should be pretty easy.
I 100% agree. And I guess actually talking about the Falcons passing defense, we didn't really talk about this, but that Minnesota game, JSN held the two catches for 23 yards. Like, that was JSN's worst game of the season by far. And that could be like a little bit of a weakness that we might see exploited by good defenses. It's not, it may or may not happen here against the Falcons, but I do think we'll still be able to generate some offense. But we got to keep an eye on that in terms of the layering of this Seahawks passing game. It needs to improve if we're going to play against good defenses. You know, if we ever see, if we see the Rams in the playoffs or anything like that, like, we'll need to be able to generate offense. So, this will be another good test for our passing offense. You know, if we're able to generate probably 200, 250 yards against this team, I'll feel a lot more comfortable. But Darnold struggled against some good passing defenses. So we will see what happens there. Anything else to say about this Falcons game before we jump to some value dogs, man? We've been kind of flying through this. We've got a lot to cover, but also not a ton.
I just want to touch on, you know, kind of the playoff picture for the Seahawks here. Yeah. They're tied with the Rams at 9-3. They're in a good position to compete with the Rams for the top of the division. And then it is worth noting, you know, at 9-3, they're tied with the Bears for the best record in the NFC. So, it will be tight. Them and the Rams, a lot's going to come down to that next matchup between those two teams to see who's going to pull out the NFC West. But it's looking pretty locked in that we'll get one of the higher wild cards, if not. So, the nice thing about the NFC, as you've already noted, is there aren't any teams that, you know, really scream at you outside of the Rams and maybe the Bears, depending on how you feel about that group. So not a bad year to get a wild card, all things concerned, but obviously you want to push to try to take the division.
Yeah, I think it's a question of, like, is the top wild card spot the best one to take? And I think that's definitely a yes, right? The NFC South, like, the Buccaneers have been pretty banged up. I'm trying to think of the NFC East. There's like potential for that to be the Cowboys, like, maybe, but the Eagles, you know, it's the Eagles to lose right now. So as of right now, that'd be a little bit of the Eagles' concern. NFC North is obviously Bears or Packers. So I think it's definitely going to be Bucks or, hear me out, Panthers. But any, like, either of those teams, I think the Seahawks have a good shot against. So either way, if we're the top wildcard spot or the number one seed, we're happy with either one of those positions. Obviously, we want to be the number one seed, get that bye, get the team rested. But I think we're looking at either way at a great position for these guys. I want to ask you, like, what is, besides the Rams, and I think their offense is probably the thing, but, like, when we talked about the Rams, we talked about how the offense and defense of both of those teams were, like, some of the top tiers. There's nothing that's, like, the weak point. What is the team who has, like, the unit that scares you the most besides the Rams?
NFC and AFC?
Just NFC. For now.
Man, outside of the Rams, looking at the NFC, this is crazy to say, but probably the Bears offense. And that's
insane to me.
Well, but so here's the thing. They're 9-3. They've won their last six, I think it is. And if you look at their outings, you know, in their last five, they've gotten 47, 24, 19, 31, 24 points. So, you know, up and down, but they certainly have some, you know, big scoring potential. And what they've really unlocked these last couple weeks is their ground game. Now, that's, you know, it sounds so strange because they were awful at running ball last year, and they were awful at running ball the first, like, 4 weeks of this season. But since then, these last, like, 4 weeks, they've been one of the best ground attacks in football, with DeAndre Swift and Kyle Menungai both being, like, very viable running backs. And they've taken just a ton of pressure off Caleb Williams. They're letting him just control the pocket, which he's amazing at, attack downfield, and then they're just getting him in a lot of third and short situations because of their running game. And it's been super effective. They've controlled game scripts in a really impressive way. And, you know, with that being said, I also just think the NFC is significantly worse than the AFC in terms of outside of the Seahawks and Rams. Their top teams just don't scare me even a little bit. AFC, there are a lot more sides of the football that I find very intimidating. But in the NFC, I'm giving it to the Bears.
Yeah, I think you look at the top teams and you're like, man, none of those, like the Eagles defense has definitely shown some holes and their offense is not explosive. The NFC North just doesn't really have like the team that has, you know, the Lions offense maybe last year would have been considered that, but yeah, not right but now.
It's been so weird this year. Yeah.
The thing that came to my head while you were talking was the 49ers offense. Like, I think no matter what, that 49ers offense is going to click and score 25 to 30 points a game. So that's a little bit scary for me. Just kind of thinking about that in terms of they're probably going to make the wild card unless things kind of, they falter towards the end of the season here. So that's a concern. We've got them in the last week. So hopefully we can knock them down a peg, get them in that seven seed and make them play whoever that two seed for the NFC is. But, yeah. That's probably my biggest fear just because they feel like even though our defense is so good, they would still score 24 points. Like that just feels like assured points for them.
Yeah, well, in division two, that always, you know, that helps too. I guess the other one that I would think of, and I didn't even include them because I think they're so bad on the other side of the football, but the Cowboys offense, I guess, is certainly more threatening than the Bears offense. I think, you know, the Bears do some stuff that's more impressive schematically, but with the horses that the Cowboys have on offense are obviously top notch. So, yeah. If I could pretend their defense didn't exist, I would be scared of the Cowboys.
Yep. All right. Let's jump into, we're going to keep talking about NFL, but let's jump to some value dogs here. If you're new here, we got value dogs. The way the value dogs work is John and I have been picking for 3 years, three different underdogs from each of the, from the games each week, to take as our cover that we expect them to cover. So that's just like the stats over the last decade plus have been that the underdogs cover, a majority of the games, like 55% or so. This season, it hasn't been as much. Underdogs are 93, 98, and 3 against the spread. So 48.7%. And home and away dogs are about even at 48.7%, as well. So pretty interesting stats so far for underdogs this year and the last couple of years. Honestly, we've had underdogs slacking over the last little bit. But John, you want to give us your first pick?
I just want to shout out my 2-1 week last week, 17 and 16 on the year, baby, all the way back over 500.
He took the lead, man.
I'm making you 5 cents on every dollar you've invested in me. So you're welcome. Feeling honestly, it was funny. We were talking pregame, and you said you weren't sure how you were feeling about this week. Looking at your picks, which I see in advance, I'm not so sure about your picks either this week, but I love my picks. I think there are three easy ones. So starting this one off with, I think, the easiest pick of the week, I'm taking the Houston Texans +3.5 against the Kansas City Chiefs. First of all, the Chiefs have been playing very up and down football, coming off a loss. Texans coming off a very impressive win over the Colts. I just think the Texans are better, but we've also got this great game where the Colts just played Kansas City and, you know, they lost, but they really had to blow the game to lose. And then the Texans actually beat the Colts last week. They beat them fair and square. So I just think, why are the Chiefs getting 3.5 against this Texans team? We were talking about sides of the ball that I fear. I think the Seahawks have the second best defense in football. I think Texans have the best defense. And with C.J. Stroud back and playing well, I think he just needed Davis Mills to threaten to take his job because he's looking like C.J. Stroud again. And if, you know, if he can score 21 points a game, they're going to win almost all their games. And he's been really moving the ball, getting the ball to Nico, just making things work. So this is a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I think they've sped up the process a little bit for the Texans. Like they were trying to have CJ do a little bit of cooking and it's just like, hey, get the ball to your receivers. Your offensive line is not that great. We're going to move quickly. The only reason I didn't take this line was because that 3.5, that little hook there is pretty nice. That half a point is pretty good.
It's huge.
I just am worried because the Chiefs need to win games now. Like they're 6-6. They need to actually start winning if they're going to make the playoffs. And I still have yet to believe that like, they're not going to, like, for whatever reason in my head, I haven't come around on the fact that like things change year to year. And it still feels like it's the Chiefs of years past that they're just going to like shape up into Chiefs form. But that's what scares me about the hook. I do like your pick though. I like that 3.5 points. I like your line a lot.
Yeah. For what it's worth, the Texans really need to win too, man. They're third in their division right now, just like Kansas City. Every game matters for them too.
Yeah, I think honestly, I think there's going to be a lot of money on the Chiefs this week, so I think it's a good idea. What I want to do is actually start looking at the money that's been placed on these bets, so we can use that a little bit to our advantage for the listeners. You know, get them some more money.
Good.
For my first pick, I'm going to take an interesting one, but I'm going to take it because there's actually a reason behind it, and it's not just me taking a team just on a random swing. I'm going to take the Jets +3 versus the Dolphins. And the reason that I'm taking this pick is because the Dolphins are in New York this weekend. And obviously, every time they are in cold weather, Tua is just my least favorite quarterback to ever watch. So +3 for the Jets. Also, they're playing pretty well. All things considered, like Tyrod Taylor has been, you know, good enough for them the last couple weeks. And Adonai Mitchell may or may not be the truth, but at least he's been a weapon. I think the Jets are decent enough to hang with the Dolphins in this game, and they have a good defense. Breece Hall is going to be running all over the place. It's a question of can they contain Devon Achane, and that is my one concern. That's the one concern with that line. But if they start to throw the ball at all, I would feel very, very comfortable with +3.
Yeah, I like the points, but Dolphins defense is obviously not very good. Dolphins may be my biggest like stay away team ever this year. I feel like every single game they're either dominating a good team or getting their butts kicked by a bad team. Tua has at times looked like a very, very, you know, probable and realistic quarterback to play, and at other times he's looked completely untenable, like he's falling apart at the seams. So I want nothing to do with the Dolphins, but hey, if you catch them on a down week, Jets are going to win by 20, so I'd like that.
I took the Jets in my like weekly picks for my work, and I was like, do I feel confident about this? No, but I feel like it's a good pick to take if you're trying to like create a little bit of separation between you and the people around you. You know, like this is either the comeback pick, like you need to make this to actually gain some ground. Because if you pick the Dolphins, you're not going to gain anything if they win or lose, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, I appreciate it. I'm going on to my next pick. You're starting to get into my higher value ones. I'm taking the Bengals +5.5 against the Buffalo Bills. A lot of B's in this one. This one surprised me a little bit too. Joe Burrow's back. He looked pretty sharp. He didn't look, you know, 100%, but he looked good in that win against the Ravens. Bengals defense played very good in that game, probably a little bit fluky. I do think the Bills will be able to move the ball against them. The Bills' defense sucks, man, and I think Joe Burrow back with this offense, it's going to be a shootout. I think they're going to be able to keep up with the Bills. 5.5 points just feels like too many to me for a game that, you know, I think Bills would love to avoid the wild card, but this game matters a lot more for the Bengals, who are trying to cling on with their fingertips to a playoff chance, so a lot of points.
I think you can't discount how much this game kind of matters to the Bills, too. Like, they're almost on the fringe playoffs. They're going to need 10, 11 wins to make the playoffs here. And they really need this. I believe they're 8-4 last time I looked. Either way, the Bills are just like a team that needs this win, but 5.5 points is a lot in that like kind of middling score. And I could see the value coming from there. I think the Bengals defense has shown a little bit. I just worry that the Bills are gonna put the clamps on these guys in some cold weather. Either way, this is Joe Burrow. The heavy passing game scares me a little bit with the Bengals. So I think Josh Allen's a little safer with this pick, but other than that, it's a pretty solid one.
Yeah, I am worried that James Cook is just gonna run for like 250 yards and make me look like an idiot, but I can live with that result.
With my second pick, I am going to go with a game that should be a field goal, if only because both of these teams are not very good and they're playing for the division, because that's just how this division is shaped up. The Steelers +6 versus the Ravens is a great game to take those 6 points. That's a lot of value because this is a game that, in theory, is one of the two of the last, like, you know, the Steelers will play the Ravens at the end of the season, and that game might have a lot of value, but this is the preliminary version of that. This is where they'll play the first time, and I feel like it's going to be decided by a field goal in the last 2 minutes of the game, and that's just +6 points is a lot of value there. You get two whole field goals, you get some garbage time touchdown potential. Like, that's a lot of value for a game that the Ravens defense sucks, or the Ravens defense has been pretty good. The Ravens offense sucks. The Steelers defense has been awful, and the Steelers offense has been not very good. I just think it's going to be a low scoring affair where field goals are going to be kicked left and right, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, in division matchup, taking the points is typically smart. 6 points is a lot of points, especially considering how the Ravens looked last week. Lamar looked terrible. Yep. You know, you can expect a certain level of bounce back from them, but One thing I will say, just this matchup specific, you know, Lamar's superpower is, you know, basically being unsackable, and the way he just makes defensive linemen look completely ridiculous when they get close to him. The one guy that I can say has consistently like stymied that is TJ Watt. For whatever reason, he just really knows how to play Lamar and just tends to get him on the ground. And Lamar always looks a little surprised, but I feel like TJ's one of those guys that can actually get to Lamar Jackson. So if he's able to do that, and especially if Lamar looks anything like he did last week against the Bengals, this could be a really rough one for the Ravens. So yeah, two very confusing teams in a division playing each other. Give me the points.
It's all you, buddy.
giving you a chance to say yeah. Yes, correct.
Nah.
With my last pick this week, going back to the well, the team we just talked about, I'm taking the Bears +6.5 against the Packers. Missed out on a chance to take the Bears over Thanksgiving week when they would have covered against the Eagles. This Packers team is, I don't know, they strike me as being very similar to the Eagles. Like, their defense has some really high upside guys, but struggles to consistently get stops. Their offense can look like the best in the NFL at times and can look completely untenable at other times. Their running back is hurt. What's his name?
Jacobs.
Thank you. Josh Jacobs is injured but could play through it. We'll see what happens there, but I just think this is a game. It's a huge game for the Bears. Like, the statement of all statements. Like, probably the biggest Bears win since they went to the Super Bowl back in 2006 would be this win this season against the Packers, to get the monkey off their back of Green Bay always beating them, to get to 10-3 and kind of lock up to a certain point this division. So they are going to be fired up. Will they win? Who knows? 6.5 is a lot.
Yeah, I looked at that line, and some of these lines I looked at and I was like, man, John's going to want those. I don't want to have the same picks as him. but yeah, I think that's some great reasoning. I looked at this Bears line and I was like, man, I feel like the Bears have been just the team that I haven't bought in on yet. Like, they're like any stock that keeps rising that I'm like, it's got to fall eventually and I'll buy it then. Like, it's just hasn't happened yet. And if they can win this game, that's like you're saying, just the statement of all statements in a year that nobody really expected them to be great. Like, they thought people thought this would be like a step forward year, but nobody thought they'd be this good so far. Yeah. They could be, you know, kind of the team of destiny this year. The Chiefs were like this last year with all their one score games. Maybe the Bears are just kind of continuing that trend. So we will see, but I really like the +6.5 there.
Yeah, one last thing on that. This is the second straight week where they've opened +3.5 against a team, and the public is just burning with hatred for this Bears team. And they're just pushing these lines up. They moved 3 points in the last like 5 days.
Yeah.
That's crazy. People are just they think this team is such a fluke. And the fact that Vegas has moved this 3 points, it's like, yeah, give me all of those points. This could easily be a field goal game. Again, the Bears could lose, but they could lose by 3 or 4 very easily. So just crazy to get this kind of value on it.
Yeah, people are fading the Bears because everybody feels like it's time for them to lose. So
it's all these people they're just doubling their losses on the Bears every single week. And they're like, but next week they're definitely going to lose. So yeah, keep it up, guys.
Eventually we'll get you all some money from that. with my last pick and our last pick of week 14, I'm going to take a team that I picked a couple weeks back that was very, very plentiful for us. And that was the Raiders +7.5 versus the Broncos. I think a couple weeks ago it was +9 or 10.5. And they still covered. They lost 10-7 in what was a very weird Thursday night football game. But yeah, the Raiders versus the Broncos, like, the Broncos have continued to lose their last 4 or 5 weeks. They've won by 3 or fewer points in every single game. They continue to win one score games, and eventually that's going to haunt them. I don't think it'll be against this Raiders team, but I think 7.5 points is a lot. And the Raiders are slowly but surely figuring out how to distribute their offense in a way that will just be, hey, get the ball to Genty or Bowers, and that's it. Like, you look at their top wide receivers, and the receivers of that group are catching the ball like maybe 4 times a game if they're lucky. Everything else is going to Brock Bowers and running through Genty. So offensively, they've struggled for the entire season, but I think this is just like their game to show up and try and beat the number one team in their division.
Yeah, it's a lot of points, but yeah, getting over a touchdown is pretty crucial in this one. The Broncos might be the most one-sided team in all of football, where their defense is, you know, up there with the Hawks and the Texans. Those are probably the three best defenses in the sport. And their offense, I know sometimes things can look okay, but it's bad. Bo Nix is not very good. RJ Harvey does not appear to be, you know, a three down back. Since Dobbins has gone down, their rushing attack has gotten a lot worse. It's, yeah, they're just tough to watch. And yeah, Raiders look pretty good in their first matchup. I'm pretty sure they covered for us in that first game against the Broncos. Getting seven is great. Brock Bowers has looked really good since he's come back. So why not? Why not? Over a touchdown, take a swing.
The more that I watch Bo Nix, the more I think that him and Michael Penix Jr. were the same guys playing at Washington and Oregon at the same time. Like, they're literally just like the most hot and cold you can get it as a quarterback. And that maybe they'll turn it on, maybe they won't. It fully depends on who's available for their team. Like, Penix, when Drake London is playing, feels like an unstoppable force. And then he can get the ball to Bijan on a screen or something like that. Like, that's like, Penix at his best is awesome to watch and really fun. It's the same thing with Bo Nix. Bo Nix can have amazing, like, single drives. But the more that you watch both of them, you're like, these guys are not that great at quarterback. They're just going to be good enough to get their team through. And Bo Nix will probably last a little bit longer than Penix in the league based on what we've seen so far. But they basically feel like the same exact guy, which is interesting. They're both super old, couple years out of college guys. So just a fun little note there.
Completely breaks my heart to hear you compare our boy Penix to Bo Nix.
It really sucks, but I kind of have to.
I wish I could tell you you're dead wrong, but there's some evidence to the contrary. So I'm going to take that on the chin.
Yes. All right. Let's move from there to talk about the UW versus Oregon football game. UW, over Thanksgiving weekend, I went to this game. It was quite the weird experience. UW loses to Oregon. It was 26-15, I believe, at the end of the game. And it was a game that, watching it, and I don't know if it felt like this on TV, but watching it, it just didn't feel like a real football game. I don't know what it was, but it was like, why is UW and why are both of these teams like either playing like garbage or they'll have like one good play and that'll be like the thing that they score on? Like Oregon's big plays, I feel like they had like three big plays for 30 to 45 yards, and that was the entirety of why they were able to win this game. It was super close, and then they had one play to kind of separate themselves, and that was it. But just quite a weird game to watch, and 26-14, my bad. What did you have any thoughts kind of like looking at the overall score and or box score and everything? Like, what were your thoughts coming out of that one?
Yeah, it was a very weird game. You called that one correctly. I want to shout out both teams. First of all, you know, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you know, UW got this thing to 19-14, and it was a real game. And that's where UW wanted to be at this time of the year. Obviously would have been awesome to steal this one from Oregon and you know, take away any chance of them making the postseason. But, you know, they did a good job staying in this. Their defense did a good job limiting Oregon to the degree that they did. And then I also, as much as I hate to do it, want to shout out the Ducks. I just think that next drive only took them about a minute, obviously capped off with a 64-yard touchdown that Dylan Moore threw. Was just, you know, it was a pretty good ice pick in the heart for this UW team. I think they really needed to at least hold Oregon to a field goal there to have a chance. So for them to respond so immediately to close it out, I hate to admit it, but I was pretty impressed with Oregon there. So with that being said, in terms of performances, not Damon Williams' best game, 15 for 30, only 130 yards and two picks. So, you know, one of those is, you know, end of the game when you're just having to huck it down the field. So we'll just say one pick. But he did not play great. Obviously, we have to talk about Adam Muhammad. This was the Adam Muhammad breakout game. 14 carries for 105 yards, 7.5 yards a pop. And his longest run was 22 yards. So it's not like he busted off 160-yard route that's thrown all this off.
Yeah.
He was just eating up this Oregon defense on the ground while Jonah Coleman was really struggling. So I don't really know what to make of that, but I was awfully impressed.
Yeah, Jonah Coleman feels like he's been playing injured the last couple games, or he hasn't played the last couple games, depending on what the situation is. But I think he's just kind of working his way back from a little bit of a tweak. And Muhammad has shown that, like, next year he's going to be the dude. Like, this was a really, really good-looking offensive attack from the ground. And it's just something that I think UW has been building on with Coleman, and it's going to come to fruition with Muhammad and who was the I don't remember what the other guy's name is that played against UCLA, or yeah, played in the UCLA game or the Purdue game, but he's the kind of like speed guy, and Muhammad's the downhill back. But he's just been super solid. Very, very pleasantly surprised with what Muhammad's been able to do with Jonah Coleman on the sideline. And yeah, it was kind of a Damon Williams unable to find anybody. I think the Oregon defense is a little bit underrated. I think around the nation, like, people know that the Oregon defense is pretty good, but it looked very, very good in this game, besides the fact that Muhammad was able to get some yards on the ground. Maybe exploitable by whatever team that they play in the playoff here, but overall, like, Oregon's defense is their strength, and then Dante Moore and their rushing game have been able to do kind of enough to get them through it. Overall, Denzel Boston didn't have anything crazy, but he had the two touchdowns, and it felt like that second touchdown to bring it to within 5 points was, that felt like, I could feel that ball was going to Denzel Boston, and it was just like, that's a play that like only Denzel Boston can make, and you just know it's going to him, and he's going to make that play. That was on a fourth down and everything. Like, that was some greatness. Yeah. So really excited for that. Really, like, overall, a decent season. They finished the season 8-4, and I'm happy with it. I think DeMond's going to be great next year. Losing probably Coleman and Boston and a couple other guys to the draft is going to be interesting, but I think this team is built for the future. It sounds like Fish is coming back next year at the very least. So all signs point to up for this UW team, which is very good to see.
Yeah, they had a chance to end the season ranked. Obviously, they would have needed to win that Oregon game, but that would have been exciting to, you know, just end a season in the top 25. One thing I just wanted to call you out and laugh at you a little bit. The guy you couldn't remember his name of, Jordan Washington. speed running backs, true sophomore for UW. So yeah, him and Adam hopefully will come back next year and make a nice tandem between the pair of them. One thing I want to say about Denzel Boston too is I've been watching a bunch of Drake London this year because I've got him in one of my good fantasy teams. And I've been watching a lot of Devontae Adams this year. I feel like Boston's got some real London and Devontae skills. Like, he's not necessarily as good as either of those guys, obviously two NFL studs. Hopefully he can reach that level at the next level. But, you know, just his ability to go up for big play balls down the field and just like hit chunk plays. But then in the red zone, the fact that, you know, he's almost more deadly than a running back, you know, like 1 yard short of the end zone is just so impressive. And yeah, it's like, okay, 4th and 3, you know, in the red zone, what do we do? Just run a slant to Denzel and let him go grab it with those big mitts. It's really impressive, and I really do think that part of his game is just, he's definitely going to the NFL, and some team's going to really value him because, honestly, kind of like Rome in that way, where he can attack down the field, but he's also really dangerous just running slants and using his hands.
Yeah, I think Boston is a better hybrid receiver than Rome is. Rome is much more of the like run a straight line guy that I think we thought that Boston would be kind of as we watched the start of the season. But as he's progressed, he's turned into a guy that can really be efficient in the red zone, which is something that we haven't really seen from Rome, at least in the NFL, at the NFL level. He was decent at the college level, but I think Boston has a chance to be even better than Rome when it comes to being in the NFL and just like being the weapon that he could be. Jonah Coleman as a pass catching back, I think is going to have some value there. I think he'll be a guy that can be a running back one on a decent team that has kind of a two running back tandem. I don't think he's going to be the workhorse, you know, get 60% of the snaps, but I think Jonah Coleman is going to be really, really good on first and third downs and be very effective back. His stock has dropped a little bit. So, hey, if you're doing a dynasty, like, look at Jonah Coleman here to get in this next upcoming dynasty draft. Cause he's going to have a lot of value with the pass catching capabilities, but some good guy, we're losing some good players here, but it's a good sign that we've got Muhammad. We've got Desmond Roebuck, a true freshman. Like, a lot of this team is going to stick around and be very, very good moving forward, which is a great sign pointing to Jed Fish here and wanting to stay or stick around.
For sure.
All right, let's jump to quick look at Wazoo. They beat Oregon State pretty handily in this one after the loss early on in the season. But Wazoo ends the season 6-6. They'll get a bowl game. Just some fun news for them. What were your thoughts coming out of this game?
Yeah, well, sweet revenge. You know, they really needed it to you know, tie the Pac-12 with Oregon State after that tough loss. One of Oregon State's only two wins on the entire season was against Wazoo. So glad they took it and took it in dominant form. They were up, I think, 32-0, or I guess 25-0. So good work by them. I was impressed with their ground game. Obviously, you know, Eckhaus didn't have his best game of the year, but he was fairly efficient, and then they just controlled the ball on the ground. So I thought that was good. It is just kind of funny to be sharing a conference championship with a team that's 2-10. So too bad they couldn't have won that first one and taken this one outright. But you do what you can do, I suppose.
Do they not play the Pac-12 championship now next week for for the third game to settle honestly, the score?
I don't know why they wouldn't, but they aren't.
Yeah, I think Wazoo was definitely the better team here. Oregon State's going to have to do a little bit of soul searching here over the next little bit. So not a ton to say here. I think Washington State is going to have to build on this season. They're not going to be a team that, you know, their quarterback leaves to go become the Heisman winner this next year, like this year and Cam Ward before him. Zevi Eckhouse is not going to be that guy. But other than that, like this is a team that has some opportunity to build, get some better players, and hopefully this next Pac-12 season will be different with regards to, you know, new teams coming in. They'll get some more variety, have some more rivalries, all that kind of stuff that Washington State's been missing from these last couple of years.
Man, a lot of smack talk coming from 7th place UW in the Big Ten when Wazoo and Oregon State finished 1st and 2nd in the Pac-12. That's okay, come on, man. Look at the standings.
This is the take Washington State and put them in the Big Ten and see where they end up. And it would be,
I don't want to,
it would
that.
Be a little rough. It would be a little rough, but
I do not.
Oh, anyways, got some exciting stuff for them for bowl season. So that'll be fun for both Washington teams. The Kraken currently 11-7-6. So that's just a little bit of news. We don't have a ton to say on them right now. We're just getting back into the swing of things with all the college basketball going on. We might as well jump to that. John, what do you want to start with? Gonzaga, UW, or Wazoo?
Okay, real quick. That was the quickest blow by of the Kraken we've ever done, and
yeah, I gotta try to keep it going.
I love it. That's fantastic. Keep that energy. But just because it's been 2 weeks, I do want to say Kraken had a nice stretch. They won 4 out of 5 and then have lost their last 3. So tough little stretch here when things were starting to look a little more encouraging. But c'est la vie. Now we can move on.
That's all you wanted to say? That you just wanted to recount their last 7 games?
That is correct. I want to start with Wazoo because I think this might be a similarly short conversation to the Kraken. Yeah. I might be ready to retire Wazoo basketball talk for the year. They have fallen to, I don't have their record in front of me, like 3-6.
Yeah.
They had 2 nice wins against Southern Utah and Chaminade. I don't even know where Southern Utah is, man. You could tell me that's in Vermont and I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, that's because you don't know where Utah is, bro. Like, it's just...
The square states are always hard, man. But yeah, their level of competition has kicked up since then, and they got beat pretty good by Arizona State, Seton Hall, and Bradley. I'm not really sure what the light at the end of the tunnel is for these guys. It seems like they're just going to win 1 out of every 3 games they play. And yeah, their schedule is full of stinkers. They get USC and Gonzaga twice. So we'll see how they do once they enter, you know, WCC play. But yeah, I don't really believe in this team very much.
No, this team is a team that at the very least right now has a 17 point per game scorer that's going to transfer, which is great for him. Great for, what is this guy's name? Anthony, I bet. Anthony Glass. Ace Glass? What a name. It's a team that, yeah, it's kind of a hub for transfers. And we've talked about it before, but like until they can get some solid funding, they basically have no funding to be able to pay players because of the TV deals and everything that's going on with the Pac-12 right now. With other teams coming in the next couple of years, like they'll be able to get better and hopefully compete to a higher level. But right now it's just been like there's 2 teams in the Pac-2 and yeah, Washington State is a little bit better than Oregon State, but there's just no money to go around for either of these teams. And it you can see it. You can see that these guys are just coming in to transfer out and hopefully they can get their bag. And that's kind of all we're seeing with Washington State. They're 3-6 and it's not looking like it's going to get any better. So I agree with you there.
There was the argument last year that, you know, maybe once they enter WCC play, they'll look pretty good with those guys, but it didn't look good last year, and they looked way better in non-con last year. So I'm not sure how these LMU games are. They might not go how you'd expect.
We will very much see. But like every game of theirs is just not. It doesn't inspire confidence. It's not like I'm looking at LMU. I'm looking at like even Pepperdine. Pepperdine's kind of been okay for the last little bit, but like Portland, like all these teams, none of those are cakewalks for this team because Washington State just doesn't have the hogs in the fight, you know? I don't think that's a saying, but I just came up with that. but other
Who wants
than that,
a dog in the fight when you can have a hog in the fight.
But other than that, yeah, I think we can I am okay with it if we bury the Washington State Cougars until they get some nice quality wins. We can bury them from the pot.
We might talk about them when there's something to talk about, but
maybe when they play weekly. Gonzaga.
Yeah, we'll have two Gonzaga games. We'll talk about Washington for sure. If they give USC a game, we'll talk about them. But I don't know, man.
Oh, all right. Let's jump to the University of Washington. We'll talk Gonzaga last because I'm sure there's a lot to talk about with that Gonzaga one. Mm. UW has looked pretty good, all things considered. Without Steinbach in that Colorado game, they didn't look amazing. They lost 81-68, but against Nevada, they looked really good. They've got a test coming up against UCLA and USC this weekend. They start Big Ten play, so that's going to be fun. And also the return of, I think it's Desmond Claude and Wesley Yates to USC. That's going to be a fun game. There's going to be a little bit of a fire there. So that's exciting. This Colorado game was interesting because it really felt like we were missing the power forward kind of like rebounder in Hans Steinbach. And it felt prevalent. There was just Wesley Yates wasn't able to get going. Zoom Diallo wasn't able to get going. And those are kind of our guys that when they're clicking, this team offensively can score, you know, 85, 90 points a game. But when they're not, you can feel it. And like Kamari Peterson, when he has to turn it on, like he played 38 minutes in this game, scored 18 points. And just like, he was basically just hucking up threes. It felt like he was just trying to keep us in it. And still only able to score 68. Was a little rough there. But Desmond Claude has been a really nice return, or been a nice player to have come back after injury. So he's been very, very a calming presence at that like kind of three spot. So all things considered, it's been a solid year so far. Like I said, 5-2. And I've been happy with where they're at. Frank Kepnang had me a little bit worried there. In between kind of this like that Baylor to Nevada stretch, I was a little worried that Kepnang was injured or fighting off something just because of what he was doing in terms of his play. But he's looked very good over the last little bit too, just in terms of explosiveness and defensively. So been happy with that. But other than that, not a ton to say. They haven't really played a ton of tough games until this weekend. So excited for this one.
Yeah, I will say, you know, missing your guy in Colorado, that's tough. Kepnang, I feel like I can never pronounce that right. No, I'm sorry. Who are you missing? Not Kepnang.
Steinbach.
That's right. Got it. He's going to transfer to Gonzaga, so I got to remember his name.
No, he's going to the NBA, man. That's a European guy. He's going to the NBA.
Yeah, he's going to the league. But I thought it was pretty impressive. I mean, Colorado is 8-0. If you look at their 8-0, it's one of the weakest non-cons I've ever seen in my life.
I was like, how is this team unranked? But yeah.
Borderline pathetic who they've played. But with that being said, they are 8-0. So I think how UW played without him is still pretty impressive. Yeah. Kamari Peterson, Desmond Claude, you know, 6-for-15 from three, you know, shooting 40% from distance is, you know, a nice boon from your, you know, shooting guard wing positions. But yeah, they just need to get a little tougher in the paint, but their offense is showing some potential. It'll be fun to see them get some higher end matchups. Obviously the double SoCal combo is always going to be fun.
Yeah, I think looking at their stats, you know, they're scoring 83 points a game, 82 and a half technically, but like 42 rebounds. Their assist totals are always super low. Like that's just kind of how they've been run recently. 13.3 assists per game. They are shooting 35% from three as a team, which isn't that bad. So just kind of figuring out where their strengths are and then capitalizing on those. And then obviously the return of Steinbach is just like where they would shine. That's 14 and a half points, 12 or almost 13 rebounds a game, 2.5 assists. Like that's a guy who was the centerpiece of your offense there. And the fact that he's been out, like he had 1.5 blocks a game, was shooting, well, he was 66% from three, but 56% from the field. So just like a really solid scoring player down in the post presence. Who can extend the floor a little bit. Like he's just been a really nice guy. So hopefully he can bounce back and be a part of this team moving forward. Because if he's playing with these guys, like this is a fringe tournament team. Like this is like an 11 seed tournament team if he's playing. So yeah. If everything can click, I'm hopeful for the Huskies.
Well, man, it's got to click here pretty quick because they have a stretch in early January. Between January 4th and January 17th, they are going to play the number 1, 3, 7, and 22 teams in the country over the stretch of 5 games. So that is a murderer's row of a 5-game, 2-week stretch. Figure it out before then. Coming out of that stretch, UW will either be ranked or unranked. That's what I'll tell you.
There'll either be one of the two possible options, and it's for sure.
It is one, kind of insightful, and two, 100% correct. You can take that one to the bank.
All right, let's talk Gonzaga. They had a great start to the season, obviously, with winning their first seven games, and then had a really tough eighth game. Let's talk about the Alabama game first. We'll get that nice win under our belts. 95-85 in that Alabama game. And what it was it was Graham Ike just kind of like dunking on a guy. And then Filon Jr., who was really good for Alabama, but just ran out of steam in the second half. Like he was keeping a minute. And then eventually, you know, the guy scored 29 points and fell off just because he played 37 minutes and was doing the most offensively. So felt really good there. What were your thoughts coming out of that one?
Yeah, that was epic. And it was very encouraging. It did, you know, we'll talk about some leveling results here in a bit, but this was big just to tell us who this Zag team is and who they are as certainly a top 15 team in the country. I still think top 10 is where they belong. But yeah, it was huge. I think what was so impressive about it is, you know, 95-85, that's a high scoring game, but it was a mess offensively. Neither team shot very well from three. They were 31%. We were 27%. And it was a really defensive game. I, honestly, looking back, I can't believe we got to 95 points because it was a very physical, very defensive game. And I think most of these points just came on both teams being able to get out on the break after good defensive possessions. That was a huge part of it. And yeah, our ability to, one, play the kind of defense we did. Again, we gave up 85 and they have an NBA guard that put up 29 on us. But I was really impressed with our defense. Filon was awesome. You said he kind of, you know, came down as the game went on. That is true, but we also really changed the way we were guarding him after halftime.
Yes.
And that clearly affected him. But yeah, our ability to roll with the punches, you know, they threw a couple of haymakers in that game. And yeah, Ike's performance was great. I mean, he was only 8 of 19, but he was, you know, putting up shots, which is what we needed. Braden Huff, I thought, was more impressive. 9 of 12 from the field.
Huff continues to just be awesome. Like, he's been so good all year.
So good, man. And then Tyon Grant Foster had maybe his best game as a Zag. He got to 21.
I would agree. Yep.
7 rebounds. I bet you 5 of those were offensive. He was all over the offensive glass. And then Steele Venters had his best game of the year for us, too, hitting 4 threes off the bench, which is really what we need from him. You know, just come off the bench and go 4 for 8 from three and we'll pat you on the back. So it was definitely their best win of the year. Very well-rounded. Their ability to win that game without playing their best offensively, I thought was very impressive.
Yeah, I do want to shout out real quick, Mario Saint-Supéry versus Braden Smith. I think that was the game that I was like, man, Braden Smith does not look like he belongs on this team right now. And I don't know, yeah. I haven't watched the game since then, but I have not been impressed by Braden Smith so far. And Saint-Supéry just looked like a guy who was in control, all things considered. Like, he looked like he was able to share the ball. And, you know, obviously his points all came from free throws. He was 10 for 11 from the free throw line, but he was a guy who was willing to share the ball and just like trying to get other guys open. And Braden Smith was just like a little too slow. I think Saint-Supéry was just more explosive when I watched him. So I can finally get behind the Saint-Supéry hype train. I will claim it.
Yeah. And Braden, you know, we'll talk about him a little bit in the Michigan game too, but I think what he really needs is probably just WCC play to just be able to build up some confidence and learn how he can fit in offensively with this team more than just being the Nembhard dump it into the post guy. He's still really good at that, but yeah, Mario's just shown that he's so much more dynamic at this point. You know, 10 of 11 from the free throw line, he's attacking the baskets. That's how you get to 11 free throws, which is so big for us. He had 5 rebounds against Alabama. He's a really good guard rebounder and just, yeah, fearless, which is huge for us. Before we jump into the really negative, I just do want to shout out the most dominant win of our year and probably the best we'll have this season is the 100-61 win over Maryland. We absolutely stomped them. In a lot of ways, I think it was bad for us because it set a lot of bad expectations going into Michigan. But, you know, we destroyed them. We shot 60% from the field, 40% from three, 80% from the free throw line. Everybody was getting involved. Brayden Huff went 9 for 10 from the field. Everybody was hitting their threes, and it was just, yeah, it was beautiful to watch. And unfortunately, I think, you know, we came out of this game thinking we could shoot threes, which is not, I promise you, is not going to be the strength of this Gonzaga basketball team. Do not watch the highlights of the Maryland game and convince yourself that we are going to win games by hitting threes. We'll timely threes is the best we can do.
That Maryland game was the epitome of like Gonzaga firing on all cylinders offensively. And it shows like the difference in offensive capabilities of this team compared to years past. Like 100 points felt like not that big of a feat, but it felt like you guys were firing on all cylinders and just barely got to 100 in that game.
Yes.
So that's just like a little bit of the difference over from Gonzaga from this year and years past.
Totally. And again, I'm totally good with that because we have an awesome defense. We'll talk about this Michigan game. It may not look like we have an awesome defense, but I promise you we do. Anyway, not to be outdone, after our 100-61 win over Maryland, Michigan decides to go and beat us 101-61, 1 point off the exact same score in reverse. So they smacked us around pretty good. I guess let me just talk about this a little big picture before we get into the game. These two teams came in ranked similarly. I think Gonzaga was like 14 and Michigan was like 9 or something. So people thought it'd be a really good game. Michigan's been destroying everybody and they've jumped up to third in the nation. We still climbed up to 11 even after this destruction. I think that's largely because people recognize, oh no, this Michigan team's just really, really good. So
yeah.
I'm going to try to caveat this game as we talk about it, but my main impression coming out of it, and it seems like the AP's main impression was, no, Gonzaga is still a really good team. Michigan is just maybe on another level. So instead of punishing Gonzaga, they just put Michigan where they belong, which is on top of the pile. In this game, things went about as bad as you could imagine. Michigan shot 60% from the field, 50% from the three-point line. We shot 34% from the field and 14% from the three-point line. They out-assisted us 29-17. They out-rebounded us 42-31. They out-blocked us 8-2. It was complete domination. They basically doubled us up the whole game. There was a stretch where it's like, oh, they were up, 12-6, and then they were up 18-9, and then they were up 30-15. It's like, okay, but, that's a gap we can close, but it just kept growing where they had twice our score, and then it was 80-40.
Us and they said, "Hey, we'll let the other guys get some other guys in, get some run."
Us closing it to only a 40-point loss actually makes it look better than it was. This was complete domination by Michigan.
Yeah, Gonzaga had the fabled 30-10-53 game instead of, or 30-10-50 game instead of the 40-50-90 or whatever that 50-40-90 game.
Yeah,
super high mark is.
It was just
some really bad stats there. And it really comes down to like EK was not efficient. Saint Supéry was not efficient. He didn't get any calls in that game. 2-for-9, like 2-for-9, no free throws. Like that's just kind of a big difference for him. I'm sure he was looking for calls there as well. Those Europeans do that. but Brayden Huff looked pretty good. 7-for-17. Like the offense kind of fell on his shoulders. It looks like him and Grant Foster, who was 6-for-13, like those two guys looked good. And I think, and that's a sign that like those two guys will always get their buckets this year. Like those guys are going to score 15-20 points a game. EK struggling was kind of surprising. He did walk around in that Alabama game. He was kind of walking with a limp at one point. And are you worried at all that EK is injured in any way?
If he is, it wasn't bad enough to keep him out of the game, and he'll be better going forward. He certainly may have been. I will say, he might have had the least concerning performance to me. He went 0-for-9. That's just not going to happen. That's not who Graham is. He's too big and too tough. Michigan's an awesome defensive team, and they've got tremendous size down low. Adai Mara, I think, is 7'4". He's just a monster. But Graham can learn some lessons and play a lot better. I think, the front court was terrible, but the things that impressed me, Brayden Huff was 7-17. Pretty good considering he missed three threes. He was really 7-14 on two-point shots. So he actually played pretty well for us. The fact that they played as inefficiently as they did when we know how good they are. Also, the fact that they took 7 threes, good Lord, and went 0-for-7. Stop taking threes, Graham EK and Brayden Huff. Like, I know you're trying to get in the NBA, but please stop because you're not actually that good at it, especially against good teams. So those were just totally wasted possessions. Now I'll start caveating because, again, Michigan's awesome. They deserve to be where they are. They're definitely better than us. But, offensively, we could not have played worse. We're a really good low post team that hardly scored in the low post. We're an okay 3-point shooting team that shot 13%. That's going to be better. Steele Venters, his great skill is that he's an elite 3-point shooter. He went 0-for-4 from three. Like, that's not really going to happen. And then the other big thing to caveat this is that Michigan is incredibly streaky shooting. They shoot a lot of them. This year, the least they've shot is 16 against TCU. Most has been 35 twice. So they put up threes. Game by game, they've shot 54% from three, 16% from three, 31%, 20%, 33%, 40%, 48% against Gonzaga. So their second best night of the year against us from three. They average 36% on the year, but do not be confused. They are incredibly streaky. And when they're missing, they're bricking threes. They went 5 of 25 against Middle Tennessee. So we just caught them on absolutely the wrong night. And that, you know, maybe the only hope of beating a team as talented and as big and as physical as this Michigan team is catching them on a night where they're shooting 20% from three. But if they did, and if we shot incrementally better, this would have looked much closer.
Yeah, I think the great teams in college basketball are a little bit like the great teams in the NBA in the sense of, like, no matter what, you can catch them on an off shooting night. And when it comes to March Madness, that's like the epitome of why March Madness is madness. It's because any team can lose on any given night because they shoot poorly. And Michigan is one of those teams that either, like, they're 8-0 now, probably 7. I'm not sure if they're 7 or 8-0.
7-0.
But they are a team that is built to be able to score from the interior at any given time and then kick it out and shoot a lot of threes. Like, that's what they do. And you see Gonzaga and, you know, those big guys are being 0-for-7 from three. That's a facet of the Michigan defense, basically not letting them get anything inside and making it tough to get the ball inside because this Gonzaga team wants to work on the interior as well. So, I you know, these are all caveats and these are going along with what you're saying. I'm just saying, like, this Michigan team is just so, so good and so great defensively. They're so big. They've got all this shooting that may or may not be their downfall at the end of the season when it comes to March Madness. But it's like, this is a team that the reason that they're ranked so highly is because of all of those things. And their capability to score inside is what lets them shoot so many threes on the exterior. Yes. Totally. And that's what's going to be the scary thing for them in the future is, like, they could just dump it to Yaxel Lindeberg every single possession and he'll drop 40 points in a game and that'll be it. And it's just like, it's kind of insane what they've got.
This is no shade, man. Because again, if they shoot 40% from three, they are the best team in basketball, in my opinion. I think they're UConn 2021 levels of just, like, unstoppable with how big, defensive, reboundy, shooting, just everything they do at such a high level. So, yeah, all I'm saying is the only way to beat them is to get them to miss. If they're playing their game, I think you're kind of toast. So I'm just hoping we don't have to see them again. Hopefully somebody else catches them on a bad night in the tournament and, you know, slips past them. But I think Michigan's that good. I think I would rather have to beat Purdue and Arizona than try to have to beat Michigan again. Like, I think they're that good. I think they will be number one in the country eventually. But if there is a weakness, it's the streakiness from shooting. Because you're right. There's no weakness in having four guys over 6'7" on the court. You know, there's no weakness there for sure.
Yeah, especially if they're clicking defensively.
Yeah.
All right, man. We've been talking for over an hour, as we always do. Is that the last point you want to get off for Gonzaga? You got anything crazy coming up for them right now? I'm trying to think. They actually play a good game against Kentucky here later this week, right?
Correct. That is the next one up. I'm glad they've had a bit of a break. You know, the other thing, too, is there was a lot of talk. Is like, as we were playing at the start of that Michigan game, especially coming off Alabama and us throttling Maryland, people were like, okay, wait. Is Gonzaga one of the best teams in the nation? Or is it Michigan? They were talking about going into this game, whoever wins this could be the best team in the country. Now, obviously, with the way it went, it's going to be a while before people are talking about the Zags that way again.
Yep. But,
you know, to a degree, I'm also glad we took that early bullet. I'm glad this didn't happen in the tournament. Sometimes the team just needs to, you know, get their teeth knocked in a little bit and be able to rally from that. So glad it happened when it did. 2 weeks off, big game on the 5th against Kentucky. Big opportunity to bounce back. We got a tough stretch here. UCLA's fallen out of the rankings. But we got them in a week after that. And then WCC play will start, and it should be a fair cakewalk to the finish line. So Kentucky will probably be our last opportunity to play a ranked game this season. If we beat Kentucky and if we sweep WCC play, which I hope we will, we will be a one seed in the NCAA tournament. So if you're all the Zag fans out there listening, do not take it too hard. Michigan's amazing. Hopefully we don't catch them again. But yep. I was at the point going in where I wasn't scared of anybody. Now I'm scared of Michigan and nobody else. Like I'll take Purdue tomorrow, man. I believe in this team like that, but I am scared of Michigan.
Those Wolverines, they do be terrifying a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Ugh. All right. Well, for John Kerry, I'm Tyler Carr, and this has been the Sound Up Seattle podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of Sound Up Seattle, please feel free to drop a like, comment, subscribe, do all that good stuff on YouTube. You can find us on YouTube at Sound Up Seattle if you're listening to this pod on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That's available there wherever you get your pods. You can find Sound Up Seattle on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram, all at Sound Up Seattle, all lowercase, all one word. You can find me, Tyler, at TyCart50, or what's important. Forgot about the email. You can email us your questions, comments, concerns at soundupseattle@gmail.com. And you can find John.
Playing a little throwback Star Wars Battlefront 1. You know, not even 2. Obviously, 2's the GOAT.
Man said, give me the worst graphics.
Yeah, the graphics are worse. The game, the mechanics are clunkier. Man, there is something magical about that game. And it is hard, man. I'm not sure if when they remastered it, they made like the difficulty harder or if I just used to be better at video games. But I'm getting my ass kicked by the CIS. So
it sounds like you were getting your ass kicked by real human beings and you were like, give me the robots on Battlefront 2.
Now, man, I'd way rather take the humans, man. These robots, they're deadly.
All right. With all that being said, let's go Hawks, baby. Finish out the season strong. Let's keep it going.
Go Zags. Bounce back.